Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. The questions I asked you guys about Book 7, Chapter 3, Part 2 were these. What happened in this chapter, and what did Rakitink think would happen? Not much of this chapter sunk in, I think, by now. If anyone's actually listening to this podcast for the reading part, they must be reading along at all as well, because my readings are so bad. The only reason I'm still reading the chapter as part of the podcast is because I have to read the chapter anyway. But by now it's like, is it even doing any good? Because I read a whole chapter and literally retain none of it. Like, zero words actually sink into my head. I can barely even recall like what characters were in the chapter. It's that much not sinking in for me. So this, I'm basically experiencing this book via the conversation after every chapter. If it wasn't for that, it might as well just be reading random words, because none of it is making any sense to me. Anyway, Tekrific said, sympathetic platonic feelings spark between Grushenka and Alyosha. Alyosha is perhaps seeing a version of Mary Magdalene in Grushenka. But what he's most impressed with seems to be her forgiveness of that Polish soldier fellow that deserted her. She's been touched by grace in the eyes of Alyosha. Rakitin is completely befuddled by this reversal, since his narcissism makes him incapable of understanding others on any real level. Compassion is not something he will ever understand, and his reaction is to be even more embittered and angry at the world. Okay, are we reading the same book? Because literally none of that rings any bells for me, after reading the chapter. It's so crazy that how much this book is missing the mark for me. But that's on me. I'm the first to admit it's on me. Everyone else seems to be reading and enjoying the book and following the book, which befuddles me. I'm a Norwegian, said, man, Rakitin is such an asshole. Again, I've got no idea why he's an asshole. Like, I don't know. He just found Alyosha more depressed than he's ever been, lying face down on the ground, and moments later he's grimly mocking Father Zossima in front of Alyosha. I am loving this development Alyosha is getting, especially his tirade against Rakitin. The fable of the spring onion is something Dostoevsky had heard from a peasant woman. He liked the fable enough to write his publisher about it, telling them to edit it properly. Dosto thought the story was original, but a similar story can be found in Russian national folk legends. The title of the chapter refers both to Grushenka being a layered and complicated character, and the fable. These footnotes are great. Weirdly enough, I just recently became familiar with a story by Ryunosuke Akutagawa, Ryunosuke Akutagawa, called The Spider's Thread, 1918, which is basically this exact fable. It was adapted in the anime Aoi Bungaku. Highly recommended if you're interested in the great works of Japanese literature. And The Spider's Thread episode is available on YouTube. Here's a timestamp to the relevant part of the episode. The animation and portrayal of Hal is very, very good. Pay special attention to how the main character makes himself unworthy in the exact same way as the fable Dostoy. Watching that episode in a few days before reading this chapter, now that's some synchronicity. I'm going to stop myself from ranting here, otherwise I'll gush about Aoi Bungaku for another couple of thousand characters. If you're interested in crushing bleakness and existential dread, I'm very interested in those things, watch the first four episodes, which adapt No Longer Human, the greatest work of Japanese literature. Golly. Tekrific said, great story, this spider thread. It seems most folklore has some version of this story. It's more known in the West, maybe through the story of the scorpion and the frog, that also originated in Russia. It really is a great story, says I Am Norwegian, and the bizarre but frightening portrayal of Hal in the animation really adds to it. Very cool. The onion, says Uncle Drosselmeyer, the onion is not the perfect gift or the best charity someone expects to receive. It is small, sour, insignificant, but for God there's not imperfect charity if you do it with a benevolent heart, because what you are giving is your love and solidarity, and because you are taking responsibility for other people's well-being. But if you want to be saved, here comes the small print, that benevolence needs to be habitual, consistent, otherwise your bad habits will fire back in the wrong time. Grushenka. Grushenka feels a strong identification with the woman of the story, the woman who was lost forever. But I think people should not describe themselves in absolute terms. Grushenka is a good person trapped in a hard environment. She is just confusing her circumstances with herself. She is open, sincere, empathetic. She has a wrong concept of herself, and she acts in consequence to reaffirm that inaccurate identity that she has created and believed. I don't deny she seems emotionally unstable. That, mixed with her actual environment, could be a problem. But she could make some progress if she deconstructs herself and picks better company. She is still in time, so let's see. Laura Weistich said this part showed some similarities between Grushenka and Katerina. Both were let down by men, but can't seem to let them go. Both have this romanticized idea of suffering for their love, and both have the connection to Dmitri. All right, that brings us to the end of our conversation part. Now we're going to continue on and read the Brothers Karamazov, Book 7, Chapter 4, which goes like this. It's called Cana of Galilee. It was very late, according to the monastery ideas, when Alyosha returned to the Hermitage. The doorkeeper let him in by a special entrance. It had struck 9 o'clock, the hour of rest and repose after a day of such agitation for all. Alyosha timidly opened the door and went into the elder's cell, where his coffin was now standing. There was no one in the cell but Father Pacey, reading the gospel in solitude over the coffin, and the young novice Porphyry, who, exhausted by the previous night's conversation and the disturbing incidents of the day, was sleeping the deep, sound sleep of youth on the floor of the other room. Though Father Pacey heard Alyosha come in, he did not even look in his direction. Alyosha turned to the right from the door to the corner, fell on his knees and began to pray. His soul was overflowing, but with mingled feelings. No single sensation stood out distinctly. On the contrary, one drove out another in a slow, continual rotation. But there was a sweetness in his heart, and, strange to say, Alyosha was not surprised at it. Again, he saw that coffin before him, the hidden dead figure so precious to him, but the weeping and poignant grief of the morning was no longer aching in his soul. As soon as he came in, he fell down before the coffin, as before a holy shrine, but joy was glowing in his mind and in his heart. The one window of the cell was open, the air was fresh and cool, so the smell must have become stronger if they opened the window, thought Alyosha. But even this thought of the smell of corruption, which had seemed to him so awful and humiliating a few hours before, no longer made him feel miserable or indignant. He began quietly praying, but he soon felt that he was praying almost mechanically. Fragments of thought floated through his soul, flashed like stars, and went out again at once, to be succeeded by others. But yet there was reigning in his soul a sense of the wholeness of things, something steadfast and comforting, and he was aware of it himself. Sometimes he began praying ardently. He longed to pour out his thankfulness and love. But when he had begun to pray, he passed suddenly to something else and sank into thought, forgetting both the prayer and what had interrupted it. He began listening to what Father Pacey was reading, but worn out with exhaustion, he gradually began to doze. And the third day there was a marriage in Cana of Galilee, read Father Pacey, and the mother of Jesus was there, and both Jesus was there, and both Jesus was called and his disciples to the marriage. Marriage, what's that? A marriage, floated, whirling through Alyosha's mind. There is happiness for her, too. She has gone to the feast. No, she has not taken the knife. That was only a tragic phrase. Well, tragic phrases should be forgiven. They must be. Tragic phrases comfort the heart. Without them, sorrow would be too heavy for men to bear. Rakitin has gone off to the back alley. As long as Rakitin broods over his wrongdoings, he will always go off to the back alley. But the high road, the road is wide and straight and bright as crystal, and the sun is at the end of it. Ah, what's being read? And when they wanted wine, the mother of Jesus saith unto him, they have no wine, Alyosha heard. Ah, yes, I was missing that, and I didn't want to miss it. I love that passage. It's Cana of Galilee, the first miracle. Ah, that miracle. Ah, that sweet miracle. It was not men's grief, but their joy Christ visited. He worked his miracles, first miracle, to help men's gladness. He who loves men loves their gladness too. He was always repeating that. It was one of his leading ideas. There's no living without joy, Mitya says. Yes, Mitya. Everything that is true and good is always full of forgiveness. He used to say that too. Jesus saith unto her, woman, what has it to do with thee or me? Mine hour not yet come. His mother saith unto the servants, whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. Do it, gladness, the gladness of some poor, very poor people. Of course, they were poor, since they hadn't wine enough, even at a wedding. The historians write that in those days the people living about the lake of Gennesaret were the poorest that can be possibly imagined. And another great heart, that other great being, his mother, knew that he had come not only to make his great terrible sacrifice. She knew that his heart was open even to the simple artless merrymaking of some obscure and unlearned people who had warmly bidden him to their poor wedding. Mine hour is not yet come, he said, with a soft smile. He must have smiled gently to her. And indeed, he was it to make wine abundant at poor weddings. He had come down to earth, and yet he went and did as she asked him. Ah, he is reading again. Jesus saith unto them, fill the water pots with water, and they filled them up to the brim. And he saith unto them, draw out now, and bear unto the governor of the feast, and they bear it. When the ruler of the feast had tasted the water that was made wine, and knew not whence it was, but the servants which drew the water knew, the governor of the feast called the bridegroom, and saith unto him, every man at the beginning doth set forth good wine, and when men have well drunk, that which is worse, but thou hast kept the good wine until now. But what's this? What's this? Why is the room growing wider? Ah, yes, it's the marriage, the wedding. Yes, of course. Here are the guests. Here are the young couple sitting, and the merry crowd, and where is the wise governor of the feast? But who is this? Who? Again, the walls are receding. Who is getting up there from the great table? What? He here too? But he's in the coffin. But he's here too. He has stood up. He sees me. He is coming here. God. Yes, he came up to him. To him, he, the little thin old man, with tiny wrinkles on his face, joyful and laughing softly. There was no coffin now, and he was in the same dress as he had worn yesterday, sitting with them. When the visitors had gathered about him, his face was uncovered. His eyes were shining. How was this, then? He, too, had been called to the feast. He, too, at the marriage of Cana in Galilee. Yes, my dear, I am called, too, called and bidden, he heard a soft voice saying over him. Why have you hidden yourself here out of sight? You come and join us, too. It was his voice, the voice of Father Zossima, and it must be he, since he called him. The elder raised Alyosha by the hand, and he rose from his knees. We are rejoicing, the little thin old man went on. We are drinking the new wine, the wine of new, great gladness. Do you see how many guests? Here are the bride and bridegroom. Here is the wise governor of the feast. He is tasting the new wine. Why do you wonder at me? I gave an onion to a beggar, so I too am here. And many here have given only an onion each, only one little onion. And what are all our deeds? And you, my gentle one, you, my kind boy, you too have known how to give a famished woman an onion today. Begin your work, dear one, begin it, gentle one. Do you see our son? Do you see him? I am afraid I dare not look, whispered Alyosha. Do not fear him, he is terrible in his greatness. awful in his sublimity, but infinitely merciful. He has made himself like unto us from love and rejoices with us. He is changing the water into wine that the gladness of the guests may not be cut short. He is expecting new guests. He is calling new ones unceasingly forever and ever. There they are bringing new wine. Do you see they are bringing the vessels? Something glowed in Alyosha's heart. Something filled it till it ached. Tears of rapture rose from his soul. He stretched out his hands, uttered a cry, and waked up. Again the coffin, the open window, and the soft, solemn, distinct reading of the gospel. But Alyosha did not listen to the reading. It was strange. He had fallen asleep on his knees, but now he was on his feet, and suddenly, as though thrown forward with three firm, rapid steps, he went straight up to the coffin. His shoulder brushed against Father Pacey without his noticing it. Father Pacey raised his eyes for an instant from his book, but looked away again at once, seeing that something strange was happening to the boy. Alyosha gazed for half a minute at the coffin, at the covered, motionless, dead man that lay in the coffin, with his icon on his breast and the peaked cap with the octangular cross on its head. He had only just been hearing his voice, and that voice was still ringing in his ears. He was listening, still expecting other words, but suddenly he turned sharply and went out of the cell. He did not stop on the steps either, but went quickly down. His soul, overflowing with rapture, yearned for freedom, space, and openness, the vault of heaven, full of soft, shining stars, stretched vast and fathomless above him. The Milky Way ran in two pale streams from the zenith to the horizon. The fresh, motionless, still night enfolded the earth. The white towers and golden domes of the cathedral gleamed out against the sapphire sky. The gorgeous autumn flowers in the beds round the house were slumbering till morning. The silence of earth seemed to melt into the silence of the heavens. The mystery of earth was one with the mystery of the stars. Alyosha stood, gazed, and suddenly threw himself down on the earth. He did not know why he embraced it. He could not have told why he longed so irresistibly to kiss it all. But he kissed it, weeping and sobbing and watering it with his tears, and vowed passionately to love it forever and ever. Water the earth with the tears of your joy, and love those tears, echoed in his soul. What was he weeping over? Oh, in his rapture, he was weeping even over those stars which were shining to him from the abyss of space. And he was not ashamed of that ecstasy. There seemed to be threads from all those innumerable worlds of God linking his soul to them, and it was trembling all over. In contact with other worlds, he longed to forgive everyone and for everything, and to beg forgiveness. Oh, not for himself, but for all men, for all and for everything. And others are praying for me, too, echoed again in his soul. But with every instant he felt clearly and, as it were, tangibly, that something firm and unshakable as that vault of heaven had entered into his soul. It was as though some idea had seized the sovereignty of his mind, and it was for all his life and forever and ever. He had fallen on the earth and a weak boy, but he rose up a resolute champion, and he knew and felt it suddenly at the very moment of his ecstasy. And never and never his life long could Alyosha forget that minute. Someone visited my soul in that hour, he used to say afterwards with implicit faith in his words. Within 3 days he left the monastery in accordance with the words of his elder, who had bidden him sojourn in the world. All right, there we go, another chapter down. Alyosha had a dream. Have your say about this chapter at reddit.com/r/thehemingwaylist. Thank you for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.